Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the replacing voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Replacing?
Yes.
Oh, the theme of today's show, of course. You have told me about this. This is me not listening again, sorry.
Not so much a theme, to be fair. Just an intro, like we always do, the voice of goalkeeping. Always the same, mate. Always the same. Never changes. We are, actually, I'm going to come on to this in a minute, so many episodes down in the Goalkeepers Union podcast. But yes, the replacing voice of goalkeeping, because it struck me this weekend, and in fact, in the week of fixtures just gone, so many goalkeepers came in and replaced the number one goalkeeper either through injury, either through a tactical decision, or sometimes a sending off.
Do you have any theory on this? I've got a couple of theories, but do you have any theory as to why this has happened this weekend?
I don't have theories as to why goalkeepers have seemingly all been injured at the same time. Tactically, yes. I mean, that's quite obvious. A manager has made a decision, but for injuries and for red cards, nope, not a clue.
No, and it's one that I've been thinking of, 'cause it was a really bizarre weekend for that. The amount of goalkeepers that have come off injured, injured in the warm-up, sendings off, etc. And you do wonder whether it is just coincidence, whether there's a little bit more to it. Certainly in terms of the goalkeepers that were coming in, and we'll see this more and more, that I think when you get to the back end of a season, and there was a good example actually in the Cardiff game, Dylan Phillips coming in for Alex Smithies, who's played certainly the majority of the second half of the season, but Dylan Phillips back in, of course, he started the season. But something like that would make sense, where Cardiff, who can't make the playoffs, they're not going to get relegated. Dylan, who's likely to be the number one next season, given that Alex is due to leave, that then kind of makes sense. That I think for a lot of teams that are in that kind of position, to then put a goalkeeper in goal that you can see you've got a good chance of moving forward with does make a lot of sense. But it does seem, it does feel, I mean, we're going to mention so many that either did get injured or sent off this weekend, far more than what you'd ordinarily see. And I'm, yeah, racking my brain as to whether there's a reason as to why it happens, or whether it is just purely coincidence. Sometimes with the injuries, it can be getting towards the end of a season. Naturally, there's a bit of fatigue. It is very much the sort of final furlong now. You always feel that after the Easter weekend in particular. But other than that, I just can't really understand. And maybe it is just one of those weekends, bad luck. And unfortunately, there were a lot of goalkeepers that didn't finish games.
Well, I do have a list. Do you want the list?
Oof, yes, go on. Fire them over.
So, Blackpool in midweek, Dan Grimshaw off during the game with concussion. Chris Maxwell came in and played at the weekend. QPR, yet again, Kieran Westwood, this time out before the game, a stomach bug apparently, so could be back for the next one. But Murphy Cooper in for his debut. Cardiff, Alex Smithies out like you just mentioned. Dylan Phillips in. Barnsley, Bradley Collins injured during the game. Jack Walton in. Birmingham, Neil Etheridge injured during the game. That looked like quite a nasty injury, but reports are that he is stable now in hospital, so hopefully all is well with him. But Connell Truman off the bench in that one. Fleetwood, Alex Cairns red carded. Callum Camps, an outfielder, in goal this time. They've made all their substitutions. And in League Two, Walsall, Carl Rushworth out before the game. Jack Rose in.
Which is crazy. I mean, what's that? Is that seven, was it, you've named there? Seven or eight?
Two, three, four, five, six, seven. Yeah, seven.
Seven, which then, bearing in mind there are, what, 92 teams that will play in any given weekend. Let me do my maths. It's a good, what, 7, 8%, which is just, yeah, ordinarily, like, you know, I always kind of feel that if you're a sub goalkeeper, your chances of coming on are probably around 1 in 30, 1 in 40. And yeah, essentially this weekend, it's been probably less than 1 in 10, which is really, really unusual. And there are a couple of nasty ones in there as well. A couple of the collisions that you mentioned, concussions. How Neil Etheridge, and it is just a concussion, I believe, but how he hasn't broken anything, given the power of that collision. It was really, yeah, sickening. There was, as you mentioned, a couple of Daniel Grimshaw as well. So thankfully, I want to say at the moment, doesn't sound like anything overly serious. I think Brad Collins might be waiting on some information just to know how bad the shoulder is, but hopefully that's not too bad. But yeah, I think it was just one of those weekends, unfortunately.
That collision, just quickly, that collision near Etheridge, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, weren't we, with the game between Leeds and Wolves. And we had a bit of a debate as to whether it was a red card for Raul Jimenez or not. But this is exactly the same situation, isn't it? It's exactly the same. And it just goes to show that this can happen at any given moment on a football pitch.
Yeah, it really can. And look, I can relate. And actually, I had a bit of back and forth with Neil because I had a very similar one myself when I played. And I unfortunately did break something at the time. Very similar in that it was, for me, a player looking to jump over me, in fairness, knee in the face. And I did. I broke my cheek, my eye, and I was out for a very, very long time. And also on the back of that, when it's healing, obviously being a goalkeeper, you know, you're going to be brave. You want to dive in at feet. You want to know and feel robust and feel that you can really go in with everything. So yeah, I could certainly relate to how Neil was feeling. But as I say, I was so thankful for him that there wasn't a fracture there. And don't get me wrong, concussion's still not a nice thing to have. And again, I always remember when, well, I say I remember when Paul Furlong knocked me out. I don't remember it at all. You know, but it was one that itself as well takes a long, long time to be 100% right. But it's unfortunately the nature of the job. You are very much putting your health on the line a lot of the time as a goalkeeper when you actually consider the movements that you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And when it comes to game time, the best goalkeepers, it is just the way it is. When the ball's there, you're going to go for it. You're going to put absolutely everything into making that save. And in that moment, you don't have the conscious thinking and the conscious thought of, I'm going to protect myself here. All you're thinking is, I'm keeping this ball out of the net. And it's something that makes the very best goalkeepers. I do believe that. But at the same time, it's something that will also lead to the odd injury from time to time.
Okay, well, plenty coming up in the show today. Another bumper edition. I think we might surpass the hour, all the action from all four tiers of English football, and some global stuff too, a copious amount of keeper capers. And what I would say is a quite fantastically terrific text talk as well coming up a bit later on in the show. Absolutely wonderful stuff. We've got a bit of correspondence too, but we'll hold that for next week and beyond because we need to get through this stuff. But we said a couple of weeks ago, and you called me out for it, we didn't do a patron of the week. So, Richard, for this week, patron of the week is Mr. Paul Edgar. Thank you, Paul.
Excellent, Paul. Thank you very much. Do we give the website?
The website is, yes, Patreon. You always ask me.
I should know
it
by
yourself, can you?
I know, because I should know. No. I think I've got it. It's patreon.com/goalkeepersunion.
Very good, Richard. Very good.
Thank you.
Yes, if you'd like to head on over there and just see what is on offer, pretty much what we're doing now, but support is always appreciated, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Also, on that note, I've made a ricket.
Oh, go on. Again.
Yes, again. So last week, I'm furious with myself, but last week was, in fact, drumroll please, our 200th episode.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
200 of these we've done.
It's incredible. I mean, there are times you wonder how many ways you can describe a save, but yet we continue to do it week in, week out, 200 times. Well, there you go.
And how many times you can wheel out the same old banter between two people. Yet we manage it. Somehow we manage it.
And yet people tune in from time to time. And the numbers still increase. It baffles me.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Starting, as always, in the Premier League at St. Mary's. Southampton 0, Chelsea 6. Now, I don't think you'll find many podcasts taking a positive spin on a team shipping 6 goals, but here we shall look at Fraser Forster and say, do you know what? Actually, he had a pretty good game.
Mm. And that's the life of a goalkeeper, I think, encapsulated in one game where he did, you know, some of the saves he made. I say it could have been 9. You know, I think it has been 9, hasn't it, a couple of times with Southampton. It did look like this was going to be another one of those afternoons, certainly when there was still about half an hour to play, wasn't there, when they got the sixth. But no, credit to him. He made a couple of excellent saves. One in particular that I liked off the header, more for the fact that, you know, when we talk about Fraser Forster's strengths, in theory, being the size he is, there are certain strengths that he's going to have. But one of them you wouldn't necessarily think he would have would be sharpness, and certainly down in and around his feet. And there was a header deflection down to his right. And I thought the speed at which he was able to get himself down, get a good hand to it on the line, parry it away, I thought the athleticism was excellent. And you're right, he's done well, you know, since stepping back in, obviously with the England call-up as well. They've got an interesting decision, Southampton, because he is out of contract at the end of the season. At the moment, they've only got Alex McCarthy contracted going into next season. And of course, they've still got Forster and Caballero there. So it'll be very interesting to see whether they keep those three as they are or whether Fraser, Forster, Caballero move on and they bring in two new goalkeepers.
While we're on that, can I ask you about that? Because they've been speaking about it. Ralph Hasenhüttl has come out in the week speaking about the situation and how they are, of course, monitoring it and going to make the best possible decision for the football club. But to most observers, everyone didn't realise that Alex McCarthy had signed a new deal. It seems like a lot of clubs are now taking this stance. I was speaking to a journo mate of mine earlier in the week and he said, yeah, it's weird. We don't know that certain players have signed contracts. And it wasn't until an intermediary report from the FA that was released, I think recently, showed that Alex McCarthy had actually signed a new deal. And everyone went, oh, okay, so he's not moving on in the summer.
Yeah, like you bang on, and I actually don't have an answer for it. But you're right, a lot are now taking that stance. It used to be a big thing. It felt like it was a big thing. Someone signs a new deal, and it still is in certain situations. Sky Sports will get hold of certain stories, and when certain players sign new contracts, they make a big deal of it. But you're right. I don't necessarily have an answer. There must be a reason. I guess, in theory, what do they have to gain by letting people know that someone has signed a new contract? In theory, it might be a PR one if they want to let the fans know, and that can be a real positive thing with the fans. Then perhaps they release it. But no, I'm finding that more and more as well. Certainly some of the lads that I work with, and when they've signed new contracts, it's been made very apparent that they've got no real need to get out there. Even with certain signings, believe it or not, as well, it's one where they don't necessarily, depending on the type of signing, they won't necessarily make a big deal about it. Certainly with younger players, you find younger players joining football clubs, they do keep it very quiet, keep it under wraps. So there must be a reason. I'm sure if any of you guys know the reason, please do let us know.
Just to go back to Forster before we move on, he was pretty powerless, like you said, with pretty much all of those six goals, but you could just see his frustration, and I actually quite enjoyed watching it in that sense from a humorous point of view, where he, and it must be so satisfying, right, as a goalkeeper, that you have the freedom to just boot the ball into the back of the net as hard as you possibly can. He did that on a couple of occasions, and also just when you pick it up and launch it as far and as high as you can, you just get so much power into it, just let out all your anger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a regular occurrence. And I'm sure every goalkeeper listening in has had that, where it is in that moment, you do not care where the ball goes. It is just release that anger, where you can see in the corner of your eye, no doubt the other team will be celebrating all together. And it is just that. And it's a weird moment, actually. You never really fully appreciate it, but it is that where, you know, they've scored. You can hear the roar of the crowd. They're all going a bit crazy. You've got everybody's backs in front of you, because of course everyone's walking back towards the center circle, and it is a strange kind of 30 seconds or so where you're just taking stock of what's happened, but at the same time you're having to get your mind back in the right mindset. And actually a lot of the time that'll be a bit of a trigger to do so. You just boot the ball, and in that moment it's a bit of a reset. Okay, we go again.
Nice. Okay, good save from Edouard Mendy as well, from Shea Adams in that one. A quick stat, and that is, prior to the game, a quarter of the goals conceded by Mendy this season for Chelsea were scored in the week prior. The seven from Brentford and Real Madrid. Two games.
Ah, wow. I did not know that. Well, there you go.
Just goes to show, doesn't it? Over to Villa Park. Aston Villa 0, Tottenham 4, where Hugo Lloris was, quote, turning like a Superman, like a cat. It was insane. So said Heung-min Son. Seven saves in the first half from Lloris, the most by a Spurs goalkeeper since data began, which means probably not the most ever, but since data began, that's when we, you know, that's when we count it.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was, and the fact that the scoreline finished how it did, you know, no way was that a 4-0 game. And certainly the way in which Hugo Lloris played first half, two saves that I'll touch on in particular, the one to his right-hand side, quote-unquote, near post. But my God, what a save that was. The reactions and the speed at which he moved in order to get a hand to that and get it over the bar. Brilliant, brilliant save. And also the free kick. I love the free kick save, because this is one where it's out on the angle and you take up a position where ultimately you want to be as far advanced as you can possibly be in order to impact and affect the cross? Can you come and take it? But your position basically needs to be that if they're going to whip it near post top corner, you've just about got enough time to get back and get a hand to it and make the save. So it's quite a fine balance. And the free kick could not have been any better. It was with pace, with power, in the near post, in the top corner. So to me, it just showed that Hugo Lloris got his position absolutely spot on. The athleticism he showed, the speed he showed to get back and get a hand to it. And it is effectively right on the line. It's as perfect as it could be. And I just thought it was a top, top save. And both of those saves, in my opinion, I didn't think he got the credit that he deserves. And again, this probably comes back to the Hugo Lloris conversation we've had a few times. But I thought he was exceptional.
His XGA must have bumped up a few in that as well. Good for the stats.
Yeah, absolutely. It would have been interesting. I didn't see what the XG was for Villa, but it must have been over two, if not closer to three. And they've ended up losing the game 4-0.
Well, from one quote, we shall go to another, because Manchester City 2 and Liverpool 2, what a game this was. And Edison, according to Martin Tyler, and I think everyone else watching this, probably produced the most relaxed moment he's ever seen on a football pitch. It was quite remarkable from Edison, this, as cool as a cucumber as one could be.
Oh, yeah. So, just so nonchalant. Just, yeah. Look, and again, it's, you know, let's boil it down. On the face of it, it's a reasonably simple pass that he's ended up doing. But it's for me, it's that moment where he's taken the touch, the ball's going back, and I'm sure we've all seen it, ball's going back towards the line. He could have struck it the first time, but he's decided not to because I think he realised it was a better option. And it is just that coolness of mind. And it's something we talk about a lot with Edison. And I suppose this moment does sum that up. It does encapsulate a lot of what Edison's about, in that he does not get flustered. And I'd say to a lot of young goalkeepers, look, he's one for me that, in terms of body language, because I think at the same time, he has also got the ability to really turn it on when he needs to. And he is incredibly sharp, incredibly powerful. But I think his demeanour when he plays the game, and I appreciate not all goalkeepers can necessarily pretend to be this. And when we are all different personalities, we're all different characters. So I wouldn't say be something you're not, but certainly see if there's things you can get from Edison. Because I think the way in which he plays as a goalkeeper, to show that sense of calmness for both your team and the opposition. But you can imagine if you're one of the Man City defenders and you're looking back and you've got a goalkeeper that is this cool, calm, collected, that's going to fill you with confidence. And similarly, the opposition looking at this goalkeeper that just looks like he's got it together, just looks like he's so confident in himself. I think there's a lot that we can learn. And this moment, as I say, it was essentially a simple pass, but to actually allow it to go as close to the line as he did, to have the awareness as to where the attacking player was who was sliding in, he didn't have much time, but it was just so relaxed. He knew what he was doing. It was always under control. And it's very rare that we see Edison get caught out. It's not like we've seen many of these moments where actually he gets caught out. So the fact that 99 times out of 100, he's nailing these moments, you can only give him credit.
Yeah, unbelievable. A game of that magnitude as well. And just the whole theatre of it, being inside that cauldron and just blocking everything out. And Guy Mowbray actually was the commentator on the BBC. And he said, if his heart's not beating faster after that, he's not like the rest of us. No, he's not, Guy. That's the whole point. Edison is not like the rest of us. That's why he can do things like that.
I'd love to know, and if I ever, he's not a goalkeeper that I've ever had the pleasure of meeting, unfortunately, but if ever I did, I'd love to question him on that, I think, just to whether it's one that he's just like that as a character, and it's just natural, and it's just something that he's always played the game like that, or whether he's done work in order to be that type of character. Because I do think that, of course, there's a lot of work you can do psychologically in order to improve yourself when it comes to game time, in order to find that optimum performance state. I do wonder whether that is just him naturally, or whether when he was younger he's had to put on, what is it, the whole fake it till you make it idea, and he's almost wanted to be that and he's now become it. I'd love to know.
Yeah, Alisson in the opposite end as well, the two Brazilian goalkeepers in the second half. Just want to flag this, two pings in quick succession, one to Sadio Mane and one to Trent Alexander-Arnold. He made a save in the first half as well from Raheem Sterling, which unfortunately didn't receive a mention after the save because Manchester City went and scored about 10 seconds later. So that was another case of Alissonitis for me. And a bit later on in the game too, the goal that he conceded, you know, very difficult to make a save from that. So again, I think you saw it. Raheem Sterling saw Alisson bearing down on him and thought, I'm not going to score this, and he did not.
Yeah, it's a fair point. It was an excellent save. And as you say, the fact it led to a goal soon after, not a lot you can do on that. The two strikes, I mean, the side volley out to Mane was just a thing of beauty. By the way, neither got a mention. Even the ball over the top to Alexander-Arnold and put him in essentially one-on-one didn't get a mention, which I found strange. But no, I thought he was excellent. Interestingly, the time he did get beaten one-on-one, of course, it was VAR and it was given offside. So I think it's largely down to Alisson just having the presence, but also the skill when it comes to one-on-one in order to know when to engage, how to engage, the shape that he pulls when it comes to making blocks, etc., etc. But then also I think that he just puts a curse on the opposition player. The fact that that was given offside, like the one time in recent history where we've actually seen Alisson get beaten in a one-on-one and it's given offside, it was almost like he knew.
Yeah, although not offside, was it? I mean, flipping it, that should not be offside. An attacker preying on the last man, that shouldn't be offside. There's no way that any attacker can think, oh, you know, my armpit might be offside here. It just takes everything away from your natural ability in timing your run. But just quickly on this as well, we won't go too much into this, but you mentioned the fact that Alisson's two pings weren't referenced at all. There seemed to be a love-in for right backs throughout the whole game, for fullbacks in general, which is fine. Love them. Wax lyrical about them. That's absolutely fine. But do the same for goalkeepers too, because what we heard throughout the game was the fact that although these goalkeepers are blessed with supreme ability, they do have their moments of madness and it can make everyone nervous. No, these weren't moments of madness. As we've said about Edison there, just supreme moments of skill. That's who they are. That is the modern goalkeeper now. It's not a moment of madness. It might have been 20, 30 years ago, but not anymore.
No, and even I think one of the comments was in regards to Alisson, oh, he has the odd aberration. And it's like, well, he doesn't. Like, ridiculous. Every goalkeeper in the world has apparently the odd aberration. But why are we even focused on that? These are arguably two of the top five goalkeepers in the world. Certainly two of the top 10, but I'd say two of the top five goalkeepers in the world. So why has that been referenced? Roy Keane, at the end, when he's doing the analysis, said it twice about the goal that Edison conceded. A keeper has to do better. Keeper has to do better. Okay, Roy, that's fine. Why? Why and how? And actually all it is that from a real basic analysis point of view, he's seen that the shot's gone in, that it's hit Edison. Edison's got a decent chunk of the ball and it's ended up in the corner. Now, the truth is Edison's got absolutely no chance, because what he's done in that moment is he's tried to predict play. He's tried to then read it, which you have to do. He's gone full length in order to make the save and the ball's effectively hit his hip and then gone in the corner. So there's nothing you could do. You can't move your hip in that moment to make the save. But again, Roy Keane obviously didn't have the expertise to break it down. So it comes back to the same comment we say over and over. Just do not comment. That is as simple as that. In the same way that, and I think it was, who was doing the commentary on the Aston Villa Spurs game? Was it Darren Bent potentially? But whoever was doing it, do you know what? Credit to them, because actually they didn't talk about Hugo Lloris. They didn't try to pretend they knew what they were talking about. They were talking from a striker's point of view about the strikers. And for that reason, I've got no issue when a pundit talks about their area of expertise. And as I say, I'm pretty sure it was Darren Bent. And he was very much talking from a striker's perspective and what he thought the strikers should have done. There was one in particular, I think Danny Ings should have done better with a chance at the far post. And again, he was very focused on Danny Ings, not so focused on Hugo Lloris. And I've got no issue. I'd prefer that. But again, it does keep coming back to the same thing we're saying, is then the expertise of goalkeeping. At some point, I'm sure it will happen. Just not yet, unfortunately.
Before we move on to the next game, just one very quick thing I wanted to bring up to you. And that was one of the reasons why VAR is fundamentally flawed. And I think that was demonstrated in the game between Manchester City and Liverpool. Did you see that? See that moment?
Go on. I did.
So Mo Salah had a shot which came off, I think it was Aymeric Laporte's thigh, but it was given as a goal kick. Mm. VAR then looked at it because they thought it might have been handball. Now, VAR would have looked at that, seen that it came off Laporte's thigh and should have been given as a corner. But because of the rules, you can't then overturn that decision. So a corner is not given. What happens then if Alisson gets the ball quickly, Liverpool player up the field and score 10 seconds later. What happens then? That is why VAR is fundamentally flawed and cannot work in football. We'll move on, shall we? Very quickly to...
Probably best we do. Just any opportunity for you to give VAR a little bit of stick.
Just thought I would just bring that one up.
I do remember at the time that the actual... in the moment, it was more for me. It was just... It was very obvious that it took a nick. I couldn't believe the referee didn't see that. But you're right. Look, it was such a strange situation. They're then going over to VAR to check for a penalty when it had been given as a goal kick. It was very, very odd.
Just absolutely ridiculous. Goodison Park, Everton 1, Manchester United 0. And Jordan Pickford, good performance from him. Two early saves from Marcus Rashford and a big block late on from Cristiano Ronaldo.
Very good. Excellent. And actually, massive, massive afternoon for Everton and for Jordan Pickford. But not necessarily, I wanted to talk about this, not necessarily for the saves. And you're right, some really sharp saves. Full stretch to the right-hand side. Been another very good one. The one that he held in the second half in particular, I was very impressed with. But more so that no one's really spoke about this. But I do think it's something worth mentioning. Because, of course, the World Cup's later this year. If Everton were to get relegated, of course, look, it'd be a huge story given how big Everton are and the many years they've been in the top flight, etc. But actually, from Jordan Pickford's point of view, just to play out that scenario, it would be fascinating to see what happens, because in theory, obviously, England goalkeeper, you would think he would then stay in the Premier League. But of course, with goalkeeping, it's not necessarily like a striker where there's going to be lots of takers and clubs would take you as an additional striker. As a goalkeeper, there's either a position available or there isn't. Now, if there wasn't a particular Premier League club of his liking or that fit or that matched the valuation that Everton would have, then there's a very, very good chance that Jordan Pickford would go to the Championship with Everton. And then what happens? Does he still then form part of the World Cup squad? I'm sure he would. Is he still then the number one? We did see with Sam Johnston, I think it was in the first squad when they got relegated to the Championship, he was involved, but then he wasn't involved thereafter. So you just wonder that if he were playing Championship football, would he still be England's number one for the World Cup? My gut says he would, purely for the fact that obviously the relationship he's got with Gareth Southgate, the way in which he's performed for England whenever he's performed. But I just wonder if there would be that question mark. It's very different. You're seen in a different light. We talk about Championship goalkeepers all the time. And when they're playing in the Championship, they're not necessarily valued in the same way. And yet the moment they step up to the Premier League, they are suddenly seen in a completely different light. So you just wonder whether that might impact anything.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, isn't it? I don't think I can recall anything like this in the modern era, maybe many, many years ago. But if you look at what the four goalkeepers currently with England that would probably be in contention for the next squad. So you've got Jordan Pickford, of course. You've got Aaron Ramsdale at Arsenal. But then you've got Nick Pope. So you've got Pickford in, 17th place with Everton. Nick Pope in 18th spot with Burnley. And then, as you say, Sam Johnston, who's a Championship goalkeeper. I mean, that just goes to show. It is all hypothetical, of course. We don't know whether Everton are going to get relegated, but they could do. So your point is valid, but it then comes back to where would he go? Like you said, where would Jordan Pickford go? We've got an England number one goalkeeper here, but he's never linked with anybody in the Premier League. You feel like it would have to be a case of, I don't know, again, hypothetically, an Emi Martinez getting gobbled up by one of the top six, for example, and then an opening comes up at Aston Villa. That's where you could maybe see Jordan Pickford making a move, but it doesn't look like anybody's actually going to go to Everton and say, right, we're going to give you 20-30 million for Jordan Pickford.
Yeah, I think it's a really fair point. And it is fascinating at the moment with where the goalkeepers are and where they're positioned. But it could change so quickly. That's the other part. That very realistically, we could be having a conversation this time next year and you've got Dean Henderson starting at Newcastle or Manchester United or wherever he ends up. You've then got Aaron Ramsdale, of course, as you mentioned, at Everton. Jordan Pickford could at that point be in an Everton team that are once again in the top seven, top eight. That's very realistic. Nick Pope, you know, if Burnley were to go down, there's already some rumours about where he may move on to. I know quite strong links with Fulham and one or two other clubs as well. So it could be that this time next year, we've got the four or five England goalkeepers all in the top 10, especially if Sam Johnston gets his move as well. So it could completely change in the next year. But yeah, as of right of this moment, it is quite a fascinating situation for the English keepers.
Okay, three more games to finish up in the Premier League. Arsenal 1, Brighton 2. Robert Sanchez, a season-saving leap, you might call it, to give the Seagulls the point. Eddie Nketiah denied there. Newcastle 1, Wolves 2. Jose Sarr actually setting a new record by becoming the first ever goalkeeper to give away three penalties in a single Premier League season. And Leicester 2, Crystal Palace 1. Kasper Schmeichel, a very good save to his left in the first half from Jean-Paul Mateta. And then two good saves in the second half from Wilfried Zaha. But unfortunately, not keeping the ball out of the net.
Yeah, let's start there, because the fact that Zaha celebrated, I mean,
I went crazy as well.
Like, really happy with himself.
Yeah,
like Kasper just outdone you twice. And anyway, yeah, but yeah, go and celebrate. But no, look, I want to talk about the save that Kasper Schmeichel made more for the fact that you quite often see on social media, they love the quote from Kasper Schmeichel about being beaten at your near post, beaten on your far. I know he spoke about it in the podcast he did with Ben Foster, I think in the last week or two, and he went into quite a lot of detail. This was a great example, because you look at the moment the shot is struck, he's taken up such a true position. You know, he's well distanced between near and far post, taking up a really true position, as I'd say. Gets down to his left, so it's going right in the far corner, and he gets fingertips in order to flick it around the post. Now, I think this is the perfect example where if you are ever so slightly over covering your near, which so many goalkeepers do, and we've discussed it before, and there are reasons why you do it, but if you're ever so slightly over covering your near, you do not make the save. And so for that reason, I just thought it was a world-class save down to his left. And I thought the penalties. The fact as well that he's made the initial save from the penalty, he's got the intelligence and reading of Zaha to know that he's then going to go the other way. And it was only the fact that it was such a bad penalty the second time round that Kasper's gone too far to his right, and he's obviously not able then to parry it out wide. He can only parry it back out centrally. But no, certainly outwitted Zaha on both occasions. And the other ones you mentioned, yeah, Sarr, it's a tricky one, because it's that classic penalty. You know, it is that classic penalty. You think you can get there, you go for it, and unfortunately the player gets there just before you. We've seen it hundreds of times, we'll see it hundreds of times more. Is there anything that Sarr can do? The fact that he's now set a record, it's going to get a little bit more attention, I'm sure, but I think we've gone through each one individually, and yeah, maybe at that point you realise they're going to get there just before you, you can pull out potentially, but I think more often than not, when you are that committed, it's very difficult. So yeah, from my point of view, I don't really lay too much blame there. But Rob Sanchez, I wanted to finish on this one, because I'll certainly finish on this one in the Premier League, because I just thought that, yeah, excellent, excellent save. I know there's a lot of stories circulating at the moment as to whether he'll still be at Brighton next season or not, and certainly he's won a lot of admirers and gained a lot of plaudits this season. But I thought that save in the last minute, to have the awareness to drop in the way he did, then to have the skill, the power, the flexibility, the speed to get up to your left-hand side in order to make the save in the top corner, I just thought he executed this absolutely perfectly in a vital moment in the game. And I think that a lot of the teams that are looking at him, they'll look at moments like this. You know, if he's got that, I suppose, mental clarity in a moment like that, and all the other attributes that he brings to the table, then no doubt he's going to be a very sought-after goalkeeper this summer.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship, where we shall sound that klaxon. Yes, Thomas Kaminski with a save and assist combo in the Battle of the Blacks, one apiece between Burn and Paul. Dan Iverson with a save and kick from Andre Dezel, and also a fingertip wide from Elias Chair as Preston quashed QPR's playoff hopes, and a double dose of vital stops from Mark Travers in a goalless draw between Sheffield United and Bournemouth. Morgan Gibbs-White kept out.
Yeah, let's run through these. Well, certainly Kaminski, I actually watched this game, streamed this game at the weekend, and I thought he was excellent again, and he has been all season. Of course, he's another one that's recently signed a new contract at Blackburn, and you can understand why they were so desperate to keep him. The one-on-one save, very, very good, but the assist, it was more the fact, and I ended up having a bit of back and forth with the goalkeeper coach at Blackburn, excellent goalkeeper coach Ben Benson, on this, and it is something they've been working on, and you could see that they had, in that it was, and it was mentioned, I think, in the commentary, the trajectory of this strike, it was more like a shot than a clip. You know, he's just drilled it, and it's absolutely perfect. Credit to the lad who's brought it down and scored. Of course, it's excellent skill in order to bring the ball down, but it is, I suppose it's the equivalent of the quarterback in NFL, you know, and it's the Hail Mary to an extent. But with such precision, I just thought the ability to see the runner and to execute the pass, I'd love to show this, I guess, from behind the goal. I don't know if there is a camera angle to show it, but it would really show the skill involved in a pass like this, because it is absolutely perfect. And the fact that they did go on and score, brilliant for him. I think it may be the first assist of his career as well, from what I've heard. So, yeah, big well done to him. You mentioned a couple of other goalkeepers there. Iversen, very good all afternoon. Felt a bit sorry for QPR. They had plenty of chances in this one, but he was in inspired form again. Of course, Murphy Cooper made his debut for QPR, and a big well done to him. I thought some of the saves he made second half, must have been 4 or 5 saves comfortably second half, kept the score down at that point once Preston had really taken control of the game. But I thought for him to step in for his debut, given that he hadn't played above Conference South level before, to suddenly play against Preston away in a game of this magnitude, I thought he handled the occasion brilliantly. His general game was very good. No chance on the goals, made several saves. So a massive well done to him. And then Travers, an excellent game, it's fair to say. Interesting save. Firstly, the spread save, I thought fantastic. Came out, got very close, produced a good shape, made a very good save. The actual save he made before that, it's a brilliant, brilliant save from a reaction point of view. But interestingly, when it shows the angle from behind the player striking the ball, you could actually see that he'd started to guess. He started to guess to go to his right-hand side, which is where you would predict that the striker would go. They're taught to go that way. But actually, he's ended up going back across him, and he's ended up getting up a left hand in order to make the save. So on one hand, you could look at it and say, oh, he's guessed, he started to go. But actually, the ability to adjust and then make the save with his left-hand side, use these words a lot, but the speed in particular involved in that, the reactions involved to get a good left hand, and it was a vital save at a vital time. Massive save for them, and in the end this could be a huge point for them.
I know that we've said this a bunch of times in recent podcasts, but probably man of the match in that game too. Prior to the game, he'd been man of the match, I think, in the 4 previous games for Bournemouth. Player of the month too. I mean, if they do go up automatically, it's going to largely be down to Mark Travers in recent times, because Nottingham Forest and the form that they are showing, Bree Samba stayed in goal for them, by the way, so Ethan Horvath still on the bench. I would put money and gamble responsibly when the fun stops starts, but I would put money on Nottingham Forest going up automatically. Actually, I still think that that might happen.
Okay. Yeah, well, look, it is going to be a fascinating last few weeks of the season. And interestingly, we talk about Travers, and I'll bring Marek Rodak into this conversation as well, because both keepers have been exceptional. Now, if it is to be those two, or if it is to be Nottingham Forest, whoever it is, in fairness, you've then got that situation. This happened to Marek Rodak before when they got promoted to the Premier League, and of course they then decided to bring in Areola in order to play in the Premier League. They get relegated, and of course they've used Marek Rodak once more to get them promoted again. So you'd really like to think that he's earned a chance at being a number one. Is the same true for Mark Travers? Again, I'd really like to think that it is, because how much more could he have done this season? Forest have got an interesting situation. I know we spoke about Bree Samba a lot on the podcast. For both, some incredible things that he does, and then maybe one or two lapses as well. But then do they stick with him as a number one? I think you've got a lot of decisions that will be made on these promoted teams as to what they do next season. But between now and then, as you say, I think it's going to be a really, really fascinating few weeks. The fact that Nottingham Forest are in the form that they are, Bournemouth just wobbling a little bit, but they have got, I think, a 6-point gap between the two teams, and it will be down to the likes of Travers, Bree Samba. I've got no doubt that certainly those two will have a massive part to play in the running.
Lovely ping from Wes Fotheringham in that game as well. Lovely little clip with his left foot in that game between Sheffield United and Bournemouth. But Jack Walton too, a first game since January 2021 for Barnsley. I forgot to mention the Spawny goal of the week, I think, for Wilfried Zaha against Kasper Schmeichel. That has to be a contender. But this one too from Ollie Burke for Millwall. Brilliant save from Jack Walton. And then Burke sort of just thighed it in off the post. Horrible goal.
Horrible goal. Frustrating for Walton, as you mentioned, because it was an excellent save. And he has had to wait quite some time. Brad Collins has been very, very good this season, despite Barnsley not being so good. But no, it was a great save. And you feel for him. You kind of, especially when you're coming into a moment like that, again, there's only so much you can do as a goalkeeper. You hope that sometimes you make a great save like that, that the lads around you will help you out. But not in this case, unfortunately.
In into League One, where all sorts was going on. Four draws to begin. Jamie Cumming with what could prove to be a crucial save in MK Dons this season. Big, brave and strong in keeping out AFC Wimbledon's Ethan Chislett. 1-1 there. Michael Cooper, another clean sheet and another vital save too. Pretty standard, I think, now for Cooper. 0-0 between Burton and Plymouth. Matty Kovar back in action in that one as well. Bailey Peacock-Farrell, a top tip over from Kieran Sadlier, but Bolton broke back to equalise at the death against Sheffield Wednesday. And David Stockdale having an almighty Barney, I think you call this, with the upright as Wickham dropped 2 points away at Gillingham.
Yeah, he was quite upset, I think it's fair to say. I still love watching David Stockdale play. He does play with such passion, such emotion, still performing at such a high level. I did just want to make a point of talking about the Jamie Cumming save, because I thought, again, given the situation the teams are in, I think it is something that we really, at this stage of the season, we do need to take on board more than ever, because, and again, speaking from experience, and I'm sure a lot of the goalkeepers listening in, when you get to this stage of the season, things do take on that much more importance when you are in the hunt for something, and the way that MK are, and it's fascinating at the top of League One. I mean, League One has been so strong this season. We've mentioned it several times, and a result like this, a point like this, how important it might be. And he has done this a few times now, Jamie Cumming, making crucial saves. And this one I loved. It was a point blank save, but he's had to move his feet very, very quickly to get himself into position. The shape that he produced in order to make himself as big as he could was excellent. Big, big save. And who knows just how important that might be.
Gavin Batsuno and Owen Evans equally as impressive as the other, as Cheltenham beat Portsmouth. And Anthony Patterson doing a job for Sunderland. What a save at 1-1. I think this has to be a save of the weekend contender. Kieran Brown thought he'd scored. He hadn't. Sunderland won it in the 89th minute.
Yeah, another game that I watched at the weekend, actually. And it was, yeah, he was excellent. I feel for Oxford because they've had this the last three games that they've played. They've come up against inspired goalkeepers. I think Michael Cooper being one. And then it was Trevor Carson in the previous game was excellent. And now Patterson. It is quite bizarre, but all three produced man of the match performances, as far as I'm concerned. Very, very good performance. The save, as you mentioned, in the second half at 1-1, where he's had to move across his goal, back on himself, claw it out. The power and execution required to do this, I thought, was excellent. And the save in the first half as well, the top hand tip over the bar, very, very good. And certainly staking a real claim to be Sunderland's number one going into next season.
That just goes to show as well, doesn't it, that he got his break ultimately because of shortages in the goalkeeping department. Ron Hoffman was out at the time. I think he had COVID or was injured. I can't remember. But Hoffman's come back. It's a new manager in Alex Neil, and he's stuck with Patterson. You have Hoffman here, who is, you know, a Bayern Munich goalkeeper, may well move to Sunderland eventually. But as things stand, he's a Bayern Munich goalkeeper, and Anthony Patterson is keeping him out.
Yeah, and I say rightly so. It's one that, and this is where goalkeeping is so different to other positions. We've seen it a lot recently. The teams that do decide to keep swapping goalkeepers, when you've got a goalkeeper who is in good form, who plays a style of football that you want your team to play, I just think from a manager's point of view, that's exactly what you want from a goalkeeper. Of course, you want them to be able to make the big saves when needed, to be able to distribute however your style of play is, to be a personality back there, to be a good communicator, to ideally play on the front foot, and all these different things. And if a goalkeeper's in that vein of form, which, in fairness, from what I've seen, it does look like Anthony Patterson is very much there, then there is the question, at what point do you disrupt that, or do you disrupt that? Because maybe it will be a case of him bringing back Hoffman at some point, but the point at which you do the transition for me is key. Because then I also think if a goalkeeper comes in when the other goalkeeper is absolutely flying, it can be a psychological one where actually they're suddenly stepping in thinking, wow, the other lad's done brilliantly. I've got to really hit the ground running here. And as a goalkeeper, it's difficult to just hit the ground running. A lot of the time it will take you a few games to get back up to speed again. So it hasn't surprised me to see him continue to play. If there is going to be a transition, I think the manager needs to do it incredibly delicately. And there's been some other situations in other teams this season where I'd argue the managers haven't done it particularly delicately, haven't done it at the right time, and it can end up being quite costly.
Okay, over to the Highbury Stadium for...
Bada boom, bada bing, it's only a keeper caper.
So, Richard, Alex Cairns sent off for Fleetwood. And I shouldn't laugh, but I can't help it because it's very funny. Callum Camps having to go in goal for the home side. Quite the episode, this, both from the stance of the action made by Cairns in being sent off, and then the performance from Camps thereafter.
I mean, do we use the word performance? Is that... I mean, let's talk about it. First, I felt for Alex Cairns, because this is... Again, we've all had this one where if you actually watch, it does bounce quite a lot. And I know this is just going to sound like me sticking up for goalies again, but it does take quite a big bounce. And at that point, you're running. You can't really change the speed at which you're approaching the ball. So you've got to time it absolutely spot on. It's not a technique.
I can't believe you're going down this road.
No, I'm going to stick up for him. I'm going to stick up for him because, look, I'm going to make the point. This is going to be... I'm not really going to stick up for him because, yeah, look, he'll hold his hands up. And, well, he did. He literally did hold his hands up. That was
too high.
That was the problem. But, no, it's one of them where you are going for it. It's not something we've necessarily practiced. I might have done it once a month where I remember Royce at Brentford might... kick a few balls and they're bounced and you come out and head them, but it was probably once a month for 2 minutes. You know, it's not something you necessarily practice because you don't face this situation all that often. He has misjudged it. I do think the ball bounced a little bit more than he would have thought of, but he has misjudged it. Then you've got the decision. Do you allow the ball to go over your head and potentially they score an easy goal and you don't look great, or do you do what he did, which was just punch the ball away? And he did it in quite a comical fashion, in fairness. But I have to say, out of all the players they could have put in goal, was he really the best goalkeeper out of the outfield players? Because if he was, then I have to question Fleetwood. I really do have to question all of their outfield players, because he was terrible. He was so, so bad. Even the stuff that you would think that an outfield player would be able to do as a goalkeeper, kick a ball, for instance. But in a way, I quite like this, right? I quite like this. And the reason I do is that, look, we talk a lot about your likes of Gary Neville, Roy Keane, Graham Souness, Jamie Carragher, whoever else that forever give goalkeepers stick. Like, we've now got someone who has experience what it's like to be a goalie. And actually, even just putting a ball down for a goal kick and looking and knowing that you're expected to hit 70 yards on a sixpence, it's a tough technique. And we saw this. He's had, what, 4 or 5 goal kicks. I think the best one was about 20 yards short of the halfway. He managed to chip one that was about 20 yards short of the halfway. Had a couple of crosses that came in the box, and he, if anything, the ball came towards him, he just kept backpedaling into his net to get as far away from the ball as he could. The free kick that he faced lined up the wall and then just stood behind it. And had the attacking player just hit the target, he would have scored. I mean, it was just really... Look, and of course, it's not his position. And this goes back to how many times we've had this conversation about goalkeeping experts talking about goalkeeping. But he has now, you know, and from what I understand, he's a top outfield player and what have you. But he has now experienced what it's like to be a goalkeeper. So I almost want him to now tell the world. I want him to now phone the likes of Gary Neville and tell him just what it's like to stand between the sticks and just how it felt. Because you could see the occasion got the better of him.
Yeah, he's a decent player, Callum Camps, but the kicking was, like you said, I couldn't believe what I was watching, because, as you said, you'd expect the one thing an outfield player and midfielder to do is at least ping it 40, 50 yards, but he couldn't do it. So what is that then? What is that in a goalkeeper being able to ping it from a dead ball? Because if that's a free kick, he's probably being able to do that. Did he feel the pressure, or is it just a completely different technique?
I think it's a few things. I think you've got the nerves. I think for a start, consider you're putting the ball down for a goal kick. The nearest player to you is 50 yards away, and you're now expected to kick it, like I say, 60, 70 yards into a very small area. And as much as being a central midfielder, you might clip balls 30, 40 yards and the ball's moving and it's all part of play. Suddenly it's a set piece. You've got everybody watching you. You've got the fans, no doubt, giving you a bit of stick, and you have to execute this technique. And it's not a technique that is that easy to do. To fire a ball that far, as much as we watch the Premier League lads and Champ League 1, League 2, we watch them do it and do it with apparent ease. I can promise you it's not an easy technique, and it's a technique that takes years to hone. Then the power that you need in your thighs, glutes, hamstrings, etc., the power into the run-up in order to get the distance you need to get. We just take it for granted because we see it every week and we see goalkeepers perform incredible distribution, incredible techniques, but actually it's not that easy. And for me, I think in this moment, and certainly in this game, as I say, you've kind of seen almost the other end of the spectrum, and I think the realisation that it really isn't that easy. you know, there's so many outfield players, and again, we've mentioned a lot of these pundits that will look at it, and because you look and goalkeepers tend to make it look so easy, you just have an expectation that that's the standard of what it should be. But I promise you, me looking at goalkeeping and how it's evolved over the last, well, 20, 30, 40 years, even from when I played, which wasn't that long ago, goalkeepers now are by far the best they've ever been. They are the level they are now. I mean, if you were to watch footage from even 20 years ago, even when like the likes of Schmeichel, Seaman, and a lot of the goalkeepers were playing then, I think if we had today's pundits commentating on those games, the amount of stick they would give goalkeepers from back then would be immense. But of course, we kind of look back through rose-tinted glasses, and you know, I look back at a lot of my footage, and me just being a bit of a critic myself, a lot of the goals I conceded at the time that I didn't think I had any chance with, I look at very differently now. And that's because goalkeeping's evolved, the levels of excellence have increased, and we do look at the game in a completely different way.
Okay, a couple of nibs before we move on to League Two. Josh Vickers out for the season for Rotherham. Real shame for him, a broken hand. Probably, well, you don't know. It meant that Paul Warne didn't have to make a decision in that EFL Trophy final because there was a chance, I guess, he would have played. Victor Johansson played and is now the number one until the end of the season. But Vickers was on a great run, especially for clean sheets as well, was working his way up the club. But he's out for the season, so all the best to him. And Johnny Jackson, do you remember a couple of weeks ago we spoke about Johnny Jackson and his issues that he had with Craig McGillivray, speaking quite publicly about it? He's come back out again because McGillivray has been playing quite well in the past few games. And the question was put to him after the game as to how happy Johnny Jackson was about that. He said, I thought this was worth bringing up. Credit to him. He came under some criticism from myself. We had some good, honest conversations and sat down and looked at things, spoke about how and what I need him to do to improve. He's taking it on board. I think now he's relishing the opportunity to come and command his penalty box. Again, excellent today. I think there's been a marked improvement in his performances. That's credit to him. He's taken on board what I've asked and he's implemented it.
I mean, I remember we spoke at the time and I didn't really think that the game that he was referring to, and I remember the situation, the ball was pinball around the box, but I don't remember there ever being a moment where I thought, oh, we should come for that one. But naturally, this probably goes back to conversations we've had a lot about this subject, naturally you can look at it and without that kind of education you can think, come on goalie, you know, it's that classic one where they're expecting the keeper to come and claim it because of the cliche of it being in your 6 yard box, it should be the keeper's, etc. So yeah, look again, you never know how these conversations go. I think a lot of the time goalkeepers will realize that for as much as you can continually fight your corner, and I think a lot of goalkeepers do, there does come a time where at the end of the day you want to please your manager. Of course, it's the manager that picks the team, and if you're on the wrong side of him, there's a good chance that you don't get picked. So I think there comes a time where you will have that type of conversation. And I know a lot of goalkeepers, and I don't know Craig personally, so I don't know whether he did this, but there'll be a lot of times where goalkeepers will just bite their tongue. Because what do? Do you keep fighting until you're blue in the face and trying to educate someone who knows very little about goalkeeping? Or do you just say, all right, boss, yeah, no worries, and then just crack on and just keep doing the same thing? And then suddenly they see it differently because they think they've told you and they think now they can take some credit for it. So, look, I don't know if that's happened here. And certainly Johnny Jackson, someone who was actually in an England 21 squad with me back in the day, you know, top lad and doing a fantastic job at Charlton, it's fair to say. But I think with a lot of managers, I must stress, I don't know if that is the situation here at all, of course, but I think with a lot of managers, I do know that a lot of goalkeepers, it is sometimes easier just to go down that route rather than end up having an hour-long debate and trying to educate an outfield manager about goalkeeping.
Got to be a certain type of character, though, to bite your tongue, haven't you? Because that must be difficult sometimes. And actually here, this is... It's rare, I think. It's rare nowadays, to hear a manager come out and speak about his goalkeeper so openly in that way. Because, like you, I don't know what's happened behind the scenes at Charlton, but that's ordinarily the type of conversation a goalkeeper coach would have with a goalkeeper. But this is seemingly from Johnny Jackson himself. It's like Johnny Jackson has looked and gone, you need to command your box better. And has then and gone and spoken to him about it and saying, yeah, spoken to him, he sorted it out and we're all good.
Yeah, and that's it. It's kind of like, you know, I've got my beliefs on how a department should run, but naturally a manager will want to manage all 11 players and subs and whatever else. Of course, that's like a, you know, you understand why they would feel that and they want to have their input. So, and I've got no issue with that. I suppose the bit does come back to that. If they do feel like they know goalkeeping very, very well, then then for me, it's always one where you liaise with your goalkeeper coach. I think the relationship between manager and goalkeeper coach is essential, because ultimately, if you're going to make a point to the goalkeeper, I personally would always advise as a manager to run it by the goalkeeper coach first, because of course they're going to have a higher level of expertise given that they are so hyper-focused on a specific area. So run it by them. If they agree, then by all means, take it to the goalkeeper and have that conversation. I mean, I know, you can imagine, I certainly struggle with it. And I had a few very long conversations with managers that I played for, and even after games, a few very heated debates directly after games when they're giving me certain information that I just did not agree with and I found really tough to take on board. But me arguing back, I wouldn't say it always helped me necessarily. And this is the difficulty I think a lot of goalkeepers face, is that, yeah, is it really going to do you a lot of good by continually biting back? Even though you know you might be right in a situation, ultimately, what's your outcome? Your outcome is you want to continue to play games of football and build your career. And probably the same as any other job in life. You know, football isn't different in that regard, in that if your boss likes you, then there is that much more chance that you can climb the ladder.
Okay, and into League Two, where we shall sound that blooming klaxon again. Joe Murphy slipped as a back pass bounced his way. He then regained his composure. He set himself and absolutely launched one. What a pass.
Cannon. Absolute cannon. Yeah, brilliant. And the fact that when I'm watching this clip, and you sent me the clip this morning, I actually thought it might have gone the other way. I thought it might have been a keeper caper that you were sending me, just because as the ball went back to him, I thought, oh, he's in trouble here. You know, you could see he slipped. But the way in which he gained his composure and fired the ball and got the purchase on it, given the lack of run-up, yeah, phenomenal pass. And the fact that it ended up in a goal, fantastic.
Just unbelievable for goalkeeper assists. There was one in midweek as well. Sam Johnston for West Brom will top these up at the end of the season. But I reckon we are on for a record-breaking campaign for goalkeeper assists. James Belshaw solid in that one too. He's been handed a new deal by Bristol Rovers. One apiece between Tranmere and the Gas. And four more top tips over in League Two. Ben Killip in a good point for Hartlepool at Forest Green Rovers. Mark Howard and Cam Dawson with the latter taking the points for Exeter against Carlisle. And Lawrence Vigouroux, excellent at Sutton, but on the losing side for Leighton Orient.
Yeah, just to mention a couple there. Well, firstly, you mentioned Howard, the number of saves, very, very good. Still keeping up very high levels of performance there. Cameron Dawson, got to give him a lot of credit, really. I know we spoke about this a few times, the fact that he took the loan, just wanted to get the games in, and he's been exceptional for Exeter and getting plenty of plaudits and accolades along the way. And Lawrence Vigouroux, again, just another really, really solid season in a team that have really struggled, you know, and it must be very frustrating for him, because the amount of times we've had this conversation of him making save after save after save and being the type of goalkeeper he is. I mean, they're top saves. He's so dynamic, so powerful. Yeah, some brilliant saves in this one, but unfortunately, Leighton Orient couldn't score and lost the game 1-0.
And Aidan Stone, with a case of the Cairns, you'd call it, for this week, I think, handled out of goal in Port Vale's game with Oldham. He saved the subsequent free kick. They won the game. That's 8 unbeaten now for Port Vale since Stone came in and replaced Thomas Holy. Holy had been in for the 9 prior to that since signing on loan from Ipswich, but Stone now has the gloves.
Yes, indeed. He has been solid as a rock back there, I'd say.
Very good, I think I'll say to that one.
Does that work?
Oh, well, it does, yeah. Well done.
Thank you. No, that was, not my best. No, look, credit to him, because I think the fact they brought Thomas Holy in, I don't think you would have seen this situation that he would have got the chance and had kept the jersey. So massive well done to him. They are on a great run of form and will be a very interesting end to the season for them.
And finally, goalless at Six Fields. Alex Bass preserving a draw for Bradford. Liam Roberts doing the same for Northampton. And this is where we hand over to that aforementioned text talk.
How are you, listeners? It's Liam Roberts here of Northampton Town. I've been kindly asked to give you a summary of my save against Bradford City last Saturday. So from my point of view, we are getting counter-attack down the right-hand side. My centre-half's been dragged across, and just for a backstory, in the early part of the season, the winger chopped in and reversed it into the near post. So back to Saturday, he's coming down the right and he's chopped inside, and I'm quite deep in the goal from where he is, but obviously I'm wary of what he'd done at the beginning of the season, but he's cut you back to the edge of the box. And so I'm in the middle of the goal and my left centre half is now pressing the ball on the edge of the box. So I'm probably about 2 yards off my line now and he's pressing from the left. So I've kind of half gambled and had a look around him because he's kind of covering the left side of the goal off for me. So as I'm kind of looking at the ball, I'm obviously down in my set position. So I'm kind of as a loaded spring, if that makes sense. You know, my legs are down, my central gravity is a little bit lower. And the ball isn't like a typical up and under, if you get what I mean. It's not usually a top hand save. But I think because of my position of where I am, it's given me more reaction time to make the save. And luckily enough, because I'm coiled, I managed to get up as quick as I could really to react. So yeah, so we made the save and, you know, we take a point from the game. So yeah, that's a quick summary of my save from Saturday.
Well, Liam Roberts for Prime Minister, I say. That had everything, yeah. Didn't it?
Oh, I love the detail.
Absolutely everything.
Do you know what? And I've never said this to Liam, but I can hear Neil Cutler in Liam Roberts. When I hear him talk like that and the detail that he goes into, I can hear Neil Cutler. And I know people that listen in, like, for me, one of the best goalkeeper coaches in the country, and you know his success that he's had with goalkeepers. And of course, had Liam Roberts at Walsall back in the day, the success he's had with goalkeepers has been fantastic. But just listening to him there, the detail that he's going into in order to describe that save, because it was an absolutely, well, world-class save. I think it's fair to say that. You know, the strike's going top corner, the speed at which he moved in order to get the top hand, and the positioning he took up, the set position, the body shape, the body weight, everything about it was just absolutely top draw. I know we spoke about him a lot on this pod because, of course, he is leading the way, and I believe he still will be after another clean sheet, leading the way when it comes to clean sheets, and a lot of people talking about him at the moment, and rightly so, because I think the way in which his career has developed to see where he is this season, he's certainly at the peak of his powers, and you can't help but feel there's a little bit more to come from him.
We even had a how are you listeners. We had backstory. He mentioned a backstory. I think in terms of a text talk, that's everything you want from it. And without being too dramatic about this, again, it's exactly why we do the podcast and why I think text talk is my favourite element of the show, because to many an observer, right, that effectively is good shot, good save, good tip over, which is understandable. That's what a lot of people would say about that moment. But it was like limitless. In that 5-second passage, he's explained the backstory, what he was thinking. He said where he was in his goal. He said the centre-back has advanced slightly, so he's looking around his centre-back. It wouldn't ordinarily be a top-hand save, but because of the position he'd taken up, he was like a loaded coil in order to make that save. Like, there was so much detail in what was, 5 to 10 seconds worth of play.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. He set the standard. The only problem is now is that all future text talks, we are going to measure against this one. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, Matthew, not long to go. It is time for this. And we start in the Premier League. Martin Dubravka, 5th of the season, 4 of them 1-0 wins. Jordan Pickford, 2-2, 0-2-2. Edouard Mendy sorting out his D. Ilian Melier, account open for the year. Hugo Lloris, you go, he goes. Goals don't go, cleans do. David Raya, appy chappy. Tim Krul, bony mum. Wes Fodringham, 4 from 5. Mark Travers, El Pulpo. Matty Ingram, a best ever return at this level. Brees Samba taking 2 to tango. Lee Nichols taking 2 from his last 2. Matty Kovar returning to the club for the first time since November 2020. Michael Cooper, he's never been bad and he never acts the fool. Owen Evans, is that Richard Lee? Johnny Mitchell, Donny Johnny. Craig McGillivray, 5 and 8. Cam Dawson, just 1 defeat in 18 for the Grecians. Christy Pym, 1-2-3. Glenn Morris, every minute of every game. Liam Roberts, fending off the challengers. Alex Bass, handy like Shandy. Jay Lynch, hat-trick. Tom King, navigating his way up the table. Nathan Bishop, shutting up shop. Dean Bouzanis, another clean on the barbie. Joe Day, good night.
Lovely stuff, very good, Richard. Tim Krul, do you want to read that one out again, just quickly?
I mean, not really, but let's do it. So, Tim Krul, bony mum. I'm reading it like the American spelling, M-O-M, bony mum. But you, is that Boney Man of the Match?
Well, what else would it be? M-O-M. You literally just said it. Boney Mom.
Boney Mom. Boney M-O-M. Yes. You should put dots. That's what I'm going to say. You should put dot. M dot O dot M.
Perfect. Okay. Very good. Right. The table. Top of the pile. Still Liam Roberts with 19 in 41. And then we have four goalkeepers backed up on 17. Alisson in 29 games, Edison in 30 games, Luke McGee in 40 games, and Michael Cooper in 42 games.
Well, there you go. I mean, very much all to play for.
While we're on it, I also want to ask you a question as to who you think has the best clean sheet percentage in all four tiers of English football. Now, this isn't, of course, for goalkeepers who have played five games, because some will probably be 100%, or at least the very high percentages. We'll go with over 20 games this season. Who has the highest clean sheet percentage?
I am going to go for, you'd think Alisson Edison, but I'm going to go Josh Vickers.
Interesting. Close, but no. Alisson on 58.6, but top of the pile, Wes Fodderingham.
Wow.
59.3%. He's made 16 clean sheets in 27 games.
Wow. Yeah, phenomenal. Credit to him. I know we spoke about this a few times, but yeah, levels of performance have been right up there. And certainly given the way that this season's played out, I think you wouldn't have seen this at the start of the season, obviously with the whole Ramsdale thing and then bringing in Olsen, and then even then giving Verrips a chance before him. So effectively three goalkeepers have played before Wes Fodderingham's really been given a chance. But yeah, it's safe to say he's really grasped it.
He has. And while you were talking then, I've just quickly checked some facts. And I've actually got it wrong. And you've got it right.
It is Josh Vickers. I thought he was at 60%.
It's 60%. Yes.
Yeah, how have you missed that then?
I don't know. I don't know how I've missed that, because I checked it all yesterday. Yes, it is 60%. Because he's played 20 games. I think I initially went off 25. That's what I'm going to say to myself.
Right,
here. But
okay.
I've made a ricket.
Okay, fine.
I've made another ricket. Yeah, 20 games. And he has kept 12 clean sheets. Yes, 60%. Wow, there you go. You were right, Richard. But
do we now have the same conversation about Josh Vickers? I feel like I've given Wes Fodderingham all this love for being top of the pile. I feel like I'd need to at least give some to Josh. But as you say, terrible news with his hand. So we do wish him well. You'd like to think that Rotherham have done enough. They might need another win or two in order to secure automatic promotion. So no doubt he'll get his chance to improve that 60% when he enters the Championship.
If it isn't a keeper caper.
Yes, it is that jingle for the alternate round of keeper capers. We have four, Richard, four. Okay, so I'm going to run through them one by one, and then you can just give your take on each particular caper as we go. So first up, Mamadou Samassa, who is the Pahang goalkeeper, up for a corner in the Malaysian League. He attempted a bicycle kick. It was cleared off the line. Kedah, the opponents, nearly scored. The opposite coach was on the pitch. Samassa was running back, making sure that the opposition player didn't score. It was a terrible finish, by the way. Open goal, should have scored. But what a passage of play.
Oh, just the most bizarre passage of play that I've seen for quite some time. Firstly, it's as you see the goalkeeper come into camera shot, absolutely steaming in for the header, gets nowhere near it, ball goes in the air, then attempts a bicycle kick, terrible, ball drops, and so then the ball is cleared off the line, like you say, then it goes up the other end, the guy's got an open goal, and it's the laziest finish you've ever seen, just to put it wide of the goal. It's just a bizarre 20 seconds of football, and I would definitely urge everybody to check it out when they get a chance.
Over in Italy, in Serie C, Modena's Riccardo Gagno scoring in the 91st minute to secure a late victory over Imolese. Gian Maria Rossi was the unsuspecting stopper at the other end. That is just one win now from two to go up into Serie B for Modena. Riccardo Gagno, the hero.
Yeah, indeed. And this is, I know we spoke about Aidan Stowe, we spoke about Alex Cairns. It's similar. Again, the ball's bounced. It's the classic Ben Foster against Paul Robinson all those years ago, and just a misjudgment. And I felt horrible for him. It is a tough moment because he's got players running in, so he's obviously looking at the players running in and wanting to make sure he catches the ball as high as he can, but he's just completely misjudged it, and it's just bounced over his head into the goal. Massive moment.
to Australia now and the A-League, where Daniel Margouche of Western Sydney Wanderers, they were 1-0 up against Brisbane Roar with a couple of minutes to play, got himself a little mixed up with a back pass. Alex Parsons of Brisbane Roar stole in, and then Margouche unashamedly just bear hugged him to the ground.
Yeah, horrible, horrible, horrible moment. Ball's come back, just couldn't for the life of him, just couldn't get it under control. He tried everything. And even at that moment, I'm shouting at the screen, just back heel it out of play. Just get rid. And he can't. And then it breaks. The guy robs it. He's about to put it into an empty net. And what do you do in that moment? It's the last thing you can do. You know they're going to score. At least, given the way the penalty, there's a chance that the goalkeeper will save it. You know you're going to get sent off as well. But at least by giving away the penalty, there is a chance you could still win the game. The moment the ball then goes in from the penalty, just compounds everything. Horrible, horrible, horrible moment. One of those moments, the old cliche of the ground swallowing you up. That was certainly one of those moments.
And then the last one, which is actually quite shocking, but also you've got to look at it on Twitter. I think it's had about 2 million views, so you may well have already seen it. Elstone Park and Clifton Allwhites in the United Counties League Division 1. So Elstone forward Bekre Bassong runs the ball out of play in the box. The Clifton defender prevents him from passing it back to Bo Watson, the Clifton goalkeeper. So Bassong basically king hits that defender to the ground in what is actually quite a shocking sucker punch kind of manoeuvre. Watson, the goalkeeper, as a result of this, just sees red and quite literally rams his entire brute force through Bassong.
Well, I don't know what to feel about this, because it's a bizarre sequence of play. Because as you say, the outfield player punches him on the back of the head. Which, by the way, he only got a yellow card for, which...
And which, all kidding aside, is very, very dangerous. It was disgusting.
The officiating, my word, hopefully something more happens there, because, he's absolutely nailed him. Back of the head, as you say, incredibly dangerous. The thing that makes it probably look worse than it is, as you mentioned, the goalkeeper, as he's run over, he's made a conscious point of not punching, not headbutting, not doing anything that's deemed to be too bad. It is just a barge, but he's done it with such force that the lad has just gone flying into the advertising hoardings on the side. He just nailed him. Absolutely nailed him. So, I mean, is it a red card? I guess letter of the law, probably not. He did get a red card, and I think it was just the fact that the brute force that he used in order to get retribution in that moment was quite something.
I think it's a red. I think that's a red, isn't it? It reminded me of when you were a kid on the playground and you didn't want to, when you just were so angry at someone and you didn't want to punch, like you said, because you didn't want to make the act of punching someone because you thought you'd be in serious trouble for that. So you literally just used all the power in your body to just run through them because you had so much anger inside you that you couldn't even throw a punch because you were too angry. He did actually tweet, didn't he, Bo Watson, the goalkeeper, and said, red player, yellow for punching me, red for a little push. Horrific officiating. If you want to have a look at it, it's at BWATO122. That's at BWATO122 on Twitter. And I think as well, the spectators gave me a laugh because none of them really reacted. They all just looked at it unfold and no one really did anything.
Just a regular Saturday afternoon. That's just what happens every week.
Okay, Richard, I think that is us done. We said it was going to be bumper and I think you'll agree it has been.
Yeah, it has indeed. Yeah, quite a lot of goalkeeping talking points, it felt like, this week. And no doubt, plenty more over the Easter weekend.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away.
1-2-2-2-2-1-2-1-2-2-2-1-2-1-2-1-2. Winners and losers. Is it winners and losers? Sorry. Could you press that button, please, Laurie? Rightly and wrongly. Okay. Sure. Cool. No problem. I can't remember what it was. It's not winners and losers. It is rightly and wrongly. Here we go. Rightly and wrongly. Rightly and wrongly. Rightly and wrongly. Rightly and wrongly. All right. Keeper capers now. Okay. Okay, yeah. Yeah, sure, no problem. Keeper capers. So it'd be like a, start with like a wham, 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 wham. Keeper capers. Standard boring one. Nice. Well, well, well. If it isn't a keeper caper. Keeper caper. It has to be American for some reason. You like that one? Keeper capers. Keeper capers. Does that sound okay? You like that? Yeah. So, right, which ones have we got? Okay, so Keeper capers. It's now time for some keeper capers. Well, if it isn't a keeper caper. Keeper capers. Dude, he's only gone and done a keeper caper. Bada boom, bada bing, it's only a keeper caper. This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Yeah. Well, so this is, and you're listening to it, Goalkeepers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Goalkeepers Union podcast. This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast. You're listening to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Thank you for listening to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. You've been listening to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.